and we would start with, how do you feel about the post-elections scenario, the president's conceding the elections? What were the AFC's thoughts on this?
Well, Marcel, thanks for allowing this opportunity for us to have an interview. It is especially important that we do introspections and have what is regarded as postmortems. I do not think, however, that we have all the facts and all the expertise to do what will be regarded as the reasonable or perfectly reasonable introspections as yet. We are just out of the turmoil, as it were. But on your question as to the president conceding, I don't think the president ever conceded. He never used the word, in my opinion. I too never used the word, but it was when I had a thank you meeting at my ministry. Everybody felt that he conceded. We are awaiting, myself, the president, the entire AFC, APNU component, the final declarations as made by the chairperson. We had agreed that there will be a four-stage process, especially after the invasion by the PPP and others of the Hatfield Street GCOMS building. And then we indicated, in view of the fact that, quite frankly, those that were in charge of the region, four count, were saying that we won the elections, and then others were saying that we did not win the elections. I think the president was right to state that we should have a recount. And when the recount did come out, of course, we found out that the recount had made the PPP largely the winner of the elections. But so many irregularities were found in the recount, we couldn't concede in any legitimate fashion. Because there were 41 boxes alone that had no documents. We saw a number of dead people who allegedly voted, 4,000 people who were overseas, names were ticked off, and a whole lot of things. So we had to await the final declaration as per the umpire. And the umpire was Claudette Singh. And on the 2nd of August, Claudette Singh ruled that whatever the irregularities and illegalities which got to be dealt with in a court, high court, in an elections petition, the PPP, by in the numbers, must take the positions as the winners. And that was what happened, and that is what we respected. So we all felt very disappointed. We all felt that there were sufficient circumstances that did not give credibility to it after the CEO's remarks and report. But in any event, we had to respect the call of the chairperson. And so indeed, the presidency of Irfan Ali was announced and declared.
Mr. Ramchandran, you have party executive and one-time parliamentarian Dominic Gaskin saying he had never seen the SOPs from the APNU-AFC coalition. Did you see those SOPs?
I did not see them. I did not see them either. And what were the SOPs? We were, because the Region 4 numbers obviously were we had AFC scrutineers, but it was more or less in charge by the APNU side, and we were getting the results at our AFC's office, statement of poll by statement of poll, and at one point in time it just got shut down, and there were problems with the connections, as we understand it. But then when we heard from the international observers and the PPP and all of them making allegations, we too got concerned at our AFC's office. And I went down there to find out what was happening. And I heard from both Sir Ann Lynch and Greg Quinn, who walked up with me to the GCOM's first floor at Hatfield Street and indicated that this thing, some terrible things are going on. So then I indicated, well, quite clearly, they have to be remedied. I made that quite clear because Greg Quinn was there and was telling me cameras just can't be allowed. And I said, well, I don't know what is happening. I am here to see. When I came down to talk to some people, boss, everybody cussing me down. And that we rigging elections. And it was all coming from the PPP people that were here. So I decided that I will go back. And I indicated to Amna that there are problems. By that time, a number of circumstances took hold. And then there was an order for a recount. And I am very happy that indeed there was a recount. It placed things in the true perspective. It was extremely unfortunate what happened, and I'm glad that the recount brought out what actually the figures were, along with the irregularities and all the illegalities that took place. We will evolve into a better democracy because of those truths coming out. And we all, as political parties, the PPP, APNU, AFC, and all other parties, will utilize the opportunity as a learning example and a lesson.
So as of today, you still hold through to the belief that there were massive irregularities that could have significantly impacted these elections?
Absolutely. I am of the view that indeed there were massive irregularities. The fact that there were so many people who were not in Guyana, as per the evidence we got from the Commissioner of Police, and their names were ticked off as having voted validly, you know, raises my eyebrows and more. Those are extremely suspicious circumstances. How could they have voted when their records, and their very good records, kept? I act in the presumption of regularity of those records. And 4,000, that alone could have changed whether it is 33, 31, 1, into 32, 32, 1. That alone. And if you take that amount, it could have made a difference. So that has substantially affected the results. Moreover, what do you do with boxes that only have the ballots inside? 41, that come up about 11,000 votes. If you had at the petitions court going on right now, what would a judge rule in relation to boxes that do not have all the other documents? Okay? Our proper explanation as to those documents. That's 11,000 votes we're talking about. And so, at a personal level, I am of the opinion that indeed those things are substantial enough to make a difference. And I believe that there are very good chances of us being successful in an elections petition. Now, you can say that I am biased. I was prime ministerial candidate for APNU AFC. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that you can't go wrong, because indeed I am a political animal that wants to support the AFC APNU victory. But look at those things objectively. Delete the politicization of Aram Jatan from the process. What do you say in relation to 41 boxes that didn't have any of the documents excepting the votes? Would you have disqualified those? I don't know. I believe that the High Court judge will want to ask a number of questions, and she will say, obviously not credible at all. And that's my personal opinion, that's my legal opinion, and that is why I answer so affirmatively the question that you asked.
But when we look at the CARICOM Observer Team report. If we can just go to that report for a short bit. You have in that report the observer stating that any irregularities would not have impacted significantly on these elections, and it reflected the will of the people. So how can you argue?
I can argue that because their percentage of scrutinizing was very minimal. It was less than 20%. And that's their personal opinion of a system that I believe that they didn't understand very well. We are a PR system in which the entire country is one big constituency as against their countries, where they are divided into 40 little constituencies. So a couple votes here and there, they will generally know who is the parliamentarian. But if you do mischief with 15 votes in each of the stronghold of the PPP, and the PPP got about 1,000 and more strongholds in Guyana, and you just snitch a 15 or a 10 or a 5, you will get 15,000 votes. If you do the ticking off of people who are living in America, and you got false ID cards, as the allegation was made against, I think, Anil Nandalal, that caused Basil Williams and Amna to rush down to East Coast as to what's happening there. Now, if you steal 7, 8, 9, 15, 20, at an average of 15, it's 15,000 votes we're talking about all over the place. Mm-hmm. And that is why I'm saying that this thing had a grand scheme about it. Not only was the poisonous racial advertisements on the Facebook that Mercury helped them to do after collecting the information from Cambridge Analytica since 2015. You know that, are you aware that a whistleblower said from Cambridge Analytica that Donald Ramutar paid $420,000? Brittany Kaiser from Cambridge Analytica came out with the information. $420,000 to do the psychoanalysis of what is called the persuadables in this country. And they were sent very racial ads. Black man can't run aisle money. Black man can't deal with plenty money. And then they got other black people who have made speeches and so on in other countries and post these, especially to the Hindu community. That is the information I'm getting. And that is what I believe that they took Cambridge Analytica for. And that is what Cambridge Analytica is also being very criticized for, Brexit and the Trump vote. That is what they do. And then they pay the Facebook people to send you an ad that is personal to you, and afterwards it disappears. So you can't go and check it back. So whilst we were doing non-racial public rallies all over the place, the PPP were sending very racial ads to certain people that they want to bring back home. Not everybody they send the ads to, but they bought it. And that was they poisoned our democracy with that kind of racialized ads in the social media.
But if that would have targeted a number of persons, Mr. Ramchandran, you don't think that at least there should be evidence of one or
there
two
are,
or five?
There are lots of, there
ads?
Are there are plenty of them.
You've they seen do
not,
any?
No, I haven't seen any, but they're telling me. People are telling me that indeed this is what was sent. You didn't see the buy?
But shouldn't you see it?
No, you cannot.
Shouldn't you see it if you were to believe it?
No, because I know what it means to when you take advice from Cambridge Analytica. The investigation was done inside of other countries as to what they did. And if you ever read the Guardian girl that brought it out, I can give you, because last year May, I did a thing with is it Stabrook or Kitro News, that when Mercury was employed by Barajagdeo, it was not to talk to congressmen and senators. It was to do the Facebook thing. Were you going to pay people? We used to go free and meet senators. Senator Cardin, we met through our AFC chapter in Washington. You do that free. When you gotta pay $420,000 is for what? To meet congressmen? It is to get the company to get all Guyanese who are persuadable. If you get 400,000 Guyanese, you, by virtue of that ability that Cambridge Analytica has, they will then profile you and say, well, you are a persuadable. You're talking, you're a little independent, whatever it is. We know this man, and we direct an ad. And they know your how you think. If y'all reporters don't understand how our democracy will be poisoned by the big tech companies, you better learn. Because that is what happened here. And that is why Cambridge Analytica played a role in 2015, but it did not happen because it took them for too short a time, as Brittany Kaiser said. Because you actually couldn't get the Facebook ads advertised. But they got all the information in 2015. They utilized it in 2020. That is one, and then the stealing, as I indicated, so much irregularities. And that is why I am convinced that with all that we did in a period of 5 years, when we went into government, we did not do any witch hunting. And then you professionalize the police force. They're not going to take instructions from the minister. You ensure that so much infrastructural works was done. You made townships. You got local government elections. Never before for 23 years. You had also a number of things being done at the telecommunication level and the health level. So many things were done by a government that even had a no confidence motion, which we fought and all of that. And still, it is because our democracy was poisoned by the racialized ad. We did not do that nonsense. That we wanted national unity. And that is why we had a non-racial campaign. But when you got people that poison individuals who are largely independents that make the difference, because you know, APNU AFC got a base, PPP got a base, is these independent minds, and you poison them with those nasty things that we have now gotten information on. And the fact...
So it is only after the fact, only after the elections, that you got this information?
Absolutely.
Doesn't that tell on the government's own security and intel gathering measures?
Absolutely, it did not. Of course. Look, this is it doesn't tell on our intel, because we don't know. We don't want to penetrate and have a surveillance state. How could we then go and penetrate now what all your messages are? That is not what Ramjaitan would ever do. That is also why they penetrated the Brexit vote and also the Trump vote. And even the great Americans knew only after the elections. And they had investigations of Cambridge Analytica.
But it's not that, I'm not talking about direct intercepting of messages and those things. I'm talking generally, you're a government, you know that your opposition paid. It is not...
I knew of the payment.
Of the payment of the 420 to Mercury. Didn't you investigate what the 420 payment would entail in terms of services? Didn't you know that there were people on the ground here, as you would say, working? There were people on the ground in the U.S. working. Your intel gathering measures didn't... notify you to any of these
My things. Intel gathering was not that sophisticated. I now believe that, and in any event, in even greater democracies with far more sophisticated machinery for intel gathering, the Mercuries and the Cambridge Analyticas did their mischief in the most developed of countries. And that is why on election day two, when we got word of the four Russians, I just ordered their deportation, because we didn't know. And a lot of people are saying that I don't know what they were doing here. They said they come to work for Exxon. And when we asked the Exxon people, no, they're not here for us, then out you go, because that was the call.
And did you afterwards find out what it was that they were here for? Who brought them?
I asked the Commissioner of Police and the Intel Department. They didn't get far with that as far as they told me. But it was very strange. And that is why they ask me and I give certain instructions.
But when it comes to Russians and looking at that...
They were all not Russians. One was from Turkey and so on. But these are people who I suspected might have been involved in trying to manipulate our system and probably help out with the ads and all of that.
Oh, so it wasn't a manipulation of the vote count?
No. I don't think it was a manipulation of the vote count.
Oh, because we're manual.
We are manual. No, I think that they were part of this racialized ads and how, knowing how people think and how to do it and so on.
As per communities?
As per communities, and that is why they were here. But that is just a suspicion. I have no evidence of it. The intel have no evidence of it. But what the hell? Why did they lie to the police as to their presence here? Let me just get rid of them, because I think it would have been too complicated a thing to have.
Did you discuss your concerns with President Granger about this? About the use of.
I did a major interview. One year ago, that they are not here to go and lobby congressmen. They are here, and it was in the Kaicho News, sir. It was Kaicho News, not Starbuck News. Mm-hmm. That they are here to do exactly as they did with Brexit and the Trump vote. They're going to poison our democracy with these kinds of things. So obviously the president knew.
No, I mean on a one-on-one. You're the Minister of Security.
Yeah.
You're also head.
I had indicated at the national
level.
The level. That these people obviously are going to do a lot of mischief to our system by doing all kinds of ads that are going to promote the PPP.
And what did he say?
Well, he said that. Well, we will have to make sure that we counter it with having actual house-to-house campaigns as to our record of achievement and all of that. And that is as best as we could do. Because what else could we do? I can't go and stop the Zuckerbergs of the world to give you an ad that is personalized.
To your own AFC, coming back to the AFC, where are we now? You go into the 12th parliament with 9 parliamentarians. First of all, how were they chosen?
The 9 parliamentarians for the Alliance for Change were chosen by a most democratic process. The highest decision-making body of the Alliance for Change is the National Conference. Mm. And after the National Conference is the National Executive Committee. We could not have held a national conference, like a Congress, mm-hmm. hundreds of people coming from all across, to then select the 9. What we did was that we considered the criteria as adumbrated by the leader of the list, or the representative of the list, Mr. David Granger, and I thought it was a very good set of criteria. Women balance, meaning gender balance, ethnic balance, generational balance, capacities, meaning qualifications, if you got your first degree, second degree, third degree, whatever, and genuine degrees too, not fake degrees or fake first degrees. So we utilized that, and we told at the end, after deliberating on some names, and even my party asking me for my 9 names to be guided, I suppose, I gave the neck. NEC, that is it's called, my 9 proposition after a question was put to me as to what is my 9 names, and then we put it to a vote. And some people abstained, others over 21 or 22 of them voted, and the vote count reflected.
I understand. After that, it came after countrywide nominations.
Oh yes, it was
the selection of the nine.
The selection of the nine.
Mm-hmm. The selection of your
nine. Yes, it's countrywide. We had nominated. Mm-hmm. Now to select from that, and all were very competent people. I must tell you that. Mm-hmm. So they were all competent, and they came from the entire country. But the AFC, National Executive, then decided on these nine as per an election.
But when you look at criteria given by the leader of your list, you said women. I'm just zooming in on women especially. You have nine.
We had two women alone.
You only have two women alone. Yeah.
Yes.
Why?
Well, that, although sometimes you want the perfect balance, Marcel, you don't get it. And that is sometimes what happens in a democracy. Mm. And we then ask, because we know that there is a statutory or a convention, I think it is more convention, that you should have at least one third in parliament. Mm. And we were informed that indeed you have the APNU side will have about 11 or 12 women there. So our two women,
altogether
we would have more than the one third. And that is what it has turned out to be.
Okay.
So because it was very difficult now, in view of meeting that kind of allocation for women, that you're going to take out one of the nine duly elected names. Mm-hmm. And that was the difficulty. But it was resolved as a result of what the APNU side had put in as their 22, so they had about 12 women there.
So it balance,
yes,
balances.
Right.
And your party had spoken about a rotation system for the parliament. Has that been confirmed?
Well, the confirmation of that is still yet to happen. But I will tell you at the personal level, and we are a very democratic party, at a personal level, I do not believe in that rotational system, and I have indicated that to my party at the National Executive Meeting. I feel that parliamentarians must serve their five years, but there were those in the leadership that said that they will voluntarily rotate out. And I hope that, you know.
Well, what are your views for not having a rotation?
Because of the fact that you would want parliamentarians that have worked hard to get in there and duly elected there by our process to serve out that five-year term. And by that 5 year, they will become far more mature leaders, rather than in a 2.5 year period, you might hardly have them talking more than 2-3 times. And especially if with the COVID and you're not going to convene parliament regularly and all of that. And so if you had voted them in for purposes of a five-year term, okay, you would want them to be there for 5 years. Additionally, I could understand the argument that if for those who would want to rotate out voluntarily, that would be fantastic. But there is no, once you name the first five, you cannot go and order them out at 2.5 years. There is an enforceability dysfunction of saying out of the place, because they were duly elected.
And this would bring me direct to the relationship of the AFC with the APNU. Mr. Granger is the leader of the list, and that means he can pull any person from the parliament as he sees fit, no?
Mr. Granger is the leader of the list, can't just pull. I don't think, knowing the personality too, that he's ever going to do that. You have to do something.
But he can.
But yes, he can, as a result of if you do something egregious. If you now go and misbehave yourself and tending towards a charandas again, you know, you understand what I mean? You got to know what you're doing. I am deputy representative of the list too. If I see that happening, I might very well want to go and tell my leadership that this thing is happening with one of my, our nine, and we should do something about it. But I am of the view that that is not going to happen again, because we try as best as possible to select nine that are not going to behave egregious, whether it is the variant of a charandas or a non-charandas variant.
And your leader, your party leader, said that they, as for the other parties in the coalition, that they had to show their worth or must before they could have been chosen. You had they had to demonstrate that they can at least bring at least 7,000 votes to the coalition, and this resulted in some of the smaller parties not being selected for parliament. You, as a leader of the AFC, how you felt about this towards members in the same, your fellow members in that coalition?
Well, look, it is always going to be a hard choice that has to be made by the representative of the list. And indeed, when we had argued the Cummingsburg number two, the Cummingsburg Accord number two, he had made it quite clear that are we in a position to win, I think 7 by 9, 63,000 votes, right? And we indicated to him how we intend to win that set of votes. I do not want to go into the particularities here, but it is important that we indicate, and we won an elections in 2015 with 2,004,000 votes, I think, 204,000. We won almost 218,000 votes this time around. 217,900 and something votes we won. Let's put that figure there. So we indicated that if we had get around that same number, then we basically you win in your 9 or your 10 or your 12 or whatever. But we won more votes than the last time, meaning that we won about, how much that's that? That's about 13,000 more votes this time around, the APNU AFC coalition. And I think that we managed to impress on him that we had gotten our 9 seats validly. I rather suspect that that is a question that more particularly should be directed to the president in relation to what his subjective thoughts was, that this party or that party within his APNU did not bring home 7,000 votes, probably because of the work he saw that they didn't do or they did do or whatever. But I wouldn't want to venture forth into that.
I'm not speaking about venturing into his own thoughts. I'm just thinking of you being a fellow partner in the coalition, and I'm sure you would have had a relationship with persons from the Justice for All party, and not sure about Mr. Keith Scott, but I wanted to know you personally, how you felt knowing or hearing that they wouldn't or they didn't meet the criteria for a seat.
Well, knowing Keith Scott and the others, it was, you know, something that I know that they will be disappointed by. But that's the hard reality of political leadership, Marcel. It is the harsh reality. And if objectively you want to make the assessment as a leader of a political party that has to make the call, you have to do it. That is the life that we political leaders live in this country. We have to make the call. And when you make the call, a number of people are going to say that you're discriminating. You're not being inclusionary. You're excluding. Even in my party, the fact that the nine names that I mentioned as a guide, when they asked me what is my nine, I got so much blows from quarters I least expected. But that is how you live the political life. You will have it from close quarters. Why did you favor this person in the nine? Why didn't you favor that person? And but you know, you have to live with the decision, and especially if you know at the very end of the day that the criteria and the principles that you put up are being abided by when you make your decision, that you are closely aligning and connecting with that set of principles, and you make a call and you say thanks, and everybody else, I feel, should appreciate that. Guyana is a very young democracy, and a lot of people love to be critical of political leadership, but they don't ever want to be political leaders or even to enter the realm. You know this famous Calypsonian singer that we got, Dave Martins?
Mm-hmm.
Parrot loved to tell Donkey how to bat the ball, but Parrot don't want to go to the crease. That is the problem we got here. Hit the ball, Donkey, hit the ball. And when Donkey said, well, you get your backside here and bat, Parrot don't want to come. But we're going to parrot all the criticisms. And I have lived with that since I was a PYO leader. And we, the young ones, not me now, but when I say we, I'm talking about politicians, they will come to realize that these are the harsh decisions that sometimes you have to make. You enter in elections thinking you're going to win. We thought we would have win 35 seats. You only win 31. Now you have to select. It's a hell of a thing. And it's a party list system. It is not constituency system, which is far easier to select because you're parliamentarian running like in Trinidad and Barbados. So you are going to forever get criticisms. Ramjetan, racial. Ramjetan is a male chauvinist. Ramjetan this, Ramjetan that, all manner of things. But if you're not got the skin of a rhinoceros, very thick skin, you're not going to be a successful leader. And I want it to be understood that the criticism will come no matter what. And especially from sometimes those who misunderstand what we have to do in coming to our decisions.
And you think that the decisions taken is for the overall future good of the party?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yes, I believe that our nine parliamentarians, four of them being very new and very qualified and very wise, although they're young, they will do a fantastic job. And of course, the other five, myself, Rafael, Kathy, David, and Hemraj, we also bring what is called experience in Parliament. So we certainly will help those four, along with the very many young ones that APNU selected.
Tell us what would be your modus operandi in Parliament. Is the AFC going to support all of the decisions on the coalition umbrella, or with the AFC, is the AFC free to vote as it feels necessary, or
necessary is out of the question. We are part of a coalition. And we will argue our positions within a coalition, and then we are going to come out with what is called a unanimous position. We are going to have constant caucuses prior to the decisions we have to make in Parliament. And that is how it's going to work. It's going to be collaborative. And indeed, if we feel so strongly about a certain policy issue that we have to differ, we will tell the APNU counterpart, our our counterparts in the AFC and the APNU, and we will see how best we could resolve that. But I don't see a big problem.
And if you can't resolve it?
If we can't resolve it, we'll certainly ask for a vote of conscience. And we'll probably have to take an independent vote of the APNU. If we cannot resolve it, then it's unresolvable. Then we'll have to go our one way in relation to that vote. But I hardly see that as happening. Because just like in cabinet, a lot of people felt that we were subsumed. That is utter trash. A lot of people perceive us as being subsumed by the APNU. That is not so.
I was coming to that.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you're going to that. The trouble is that it is a false perception. Ourselves and the APNU leaders always resolve whatever the difference is. And that is how you collaborate in a coalition. And if you could give me an instance where we ought to have voted independent, I could give you the arguments why we did not vote independent. And as leader of the Alliance for Change, I am saying that there will be good grounds for us working together as best as possible and united in getting out a government that I felt was involved in certain things that got themselves there illegitimately.
You know, Mr. Ramchandran, quickly, something slipped me a while ago. You were talking about the Second Cummingsburg Accord, I think, and about agreements in that accord. That accord to date has never been made public.
And
it's in direct contrast to your first accord, where you brought in, you know, the drum rollers and the press and the public and everybody to say, look, we've formed this coalition, and it's a step where we're showing that we're transparent. Here is what we've had planned. This is what we will do. And then comes the Cummingsburg number two, and the press was pressing, where is this accord? Where is this accord? And to date, you heard that it would have been made public at one time. And to date, that
I'm going to ask the GS to give it out. I thought it was made public. Almost all the terms, excepting from instead of 7 to 30, which we had previously, 6 to 40 is the proportion. That was one of the major terms that was changed. And I indicated that what was there previously, largely, that was the difference.
So you didn't know that it wasn't public?
I am of the opinion that it was made public by virtue of telling you that that was the change.
It is only that one change.
That big change, right, yes. That was the change.
And on the same issue of being subsumed, the criticism comes that the AFC has lost its support base. Some people are even more savage, I should put it, in saying that the AFC is dead and cannot be.
We got 9 parliamentarians there, girl. We got about 20 councillors all across the country. That's a dead party. You, as an objective reporter, will allow that kind of scandalous hearsay to matter to you, coming from all manner of critics who now cannot come to terms with the fact that we have 9 parliamentarians and about 20 councillors in all the regions? Regional Democratic councillors? That's the trouble. People would, and then you win in an elections 14,000 more votes than the previous one in which you had won a government. Well, if we did, I don't know you. How come we did, and you're doing all of that? 9 parliamentarians, and I didn't count it up, but you have more than a.
Is on your 2015 accord and this new accord.
What?
The parliamentarians.
Yeah, that is true.
I mean, they're analyzing from now.
Yeah.
This last elections, with the whole recount fiasco and all of that, that a lot of the AFC support has crossed over to the PPP. You believe that?
I don't believe that at all. Because if they had crossed over, we would not have gotten 218,000 votes. No. You go and check back prior to when we joined up as a coalition. What was the numbers APNU used to get and AFC used to get?
And you think that difference at the last elections is on the weight of the AFC?
It is a combination. Our two major groupings has a special appeal and caused us to get more votes. You go singularly, it will be disastrous. It will be almost mandatory that you get a presidency under the PPP. We do not do that. That is combine and coalesce. You will have a potential for that always happening, a PPP government. Okay? But I believe that the combination has a special appeal. It is coalition politics being built, which is necessary for coalition politics even at a larger level. And it's a good thing for the country. I believe that that is the way to go. I suspect that all this misperception by a lot of people that we are dead, they are not actually arguing properly as to this thing, that the AFC is still alive and kicking.
And still independent?
And still independent, of course, still independent. Very much independent.
And will be able to use its influence on the coalition in terms of decision making?
Absolutely, absolutely. Policy making is a matter that is going to be intellectually argued out. And generally, you will have people from both sides arguing what might be the best policy, what might be the best motion in parliament, what might be the best decision in opposition to the PPP, and we will argue it out. We are not going to be blind bats going in there. We never did, and we never were. And that is why we won a 2015 election. And so a lot of this nonsense that we are, you know, just subsumed is total trash. And but people can say, well, why you don't put it to the test? Put it to the test. Go back as an independent AFC. But that would mean PPP in government again without much of an effort. Because in a three-way horse race inside of this country, PPP gonna get the most votes and they get the presidency. You want to make sure that that doesn't happen like in 2015, you have to go with a coalition with APNU.
So you don't see the AFC leaving the coalition?
Not at this stage, absolutely. No, absolutely not. I see us working together. I see the leadership of David Granger as an asset. It has helped in a number of situations because of his style allowing us. He never micromanaged. He allowed us to argue our points. He's not a control freak like Bharat Jagdeo. You understand me? And he is large-hearted in the sense of allowing the youngsters to come on board, to listen them through and all of that, which is a far different cry from what I know of Bharat Jagdeo, who would never allow you that kind and this kind of thing. He would kick you out, as he did to me. He would kick you out, as he did to Moses Nagamutu and Ralph Ramkaran. He does not want any dissenting opinion. And that will be the curse of the PPP. That will be the curse. When you allow Jagdeo literally to run a third term via the instrumentality of an Irfan Ali. That's what's happening here. And when people say that the young people inside of the PPP get in an opportunity, his presence alone, by virtue of placing all these cabinet ministers, take for example the oil and gas. Man gone and get a scholarship from England, like Charles Ramsden and Ian Putty, where that scholarship is going to work in Island Gas. He switched them around. So he now, as the senior granddaddy, will be asked, what should I do in this oil sector? And that is what you call Putinism, if you're a reader of how Putin does it in Moscow. And that's how they control the political party. He will still be. He wanted the third term. He had the one that fixed up Richardson to go and do that application. Thank God it was not him held constitutional. But via a bypass, politically, he's literally the president. Conventions would have told him that you do not, in a term limit situation, go to be vice president and all of that. You come off the scene like Barack Obama and Bill Clinton. But this fella wants to be there, vice president in charge of oil and the finances of the country.
But in no way in his defense, because I'm sure he can very well speak for himself, but don't you credit him for bringing the party to this victory that it has?
The victory had a lot of irregularities and illegalities about it. Is that the kind of... We are going to carry the matter to court. We have a CEO that says that the thing got illegalities and it is not credible. A CEO that says that. We got a chairperson of the Elections Commission that made a comment that these are very serious allegations. And we got the CARICOM team that says that there were allegations and serious enough, but it was reasonably credible. Well, that's their personal opinion after 20% of the scrutiny. That's all right. But who matters in Guyana? It is the judges here in an elections petition, and also whose evidence will be provided to that judge in the elections petition. The CEO and the chairperson and the summaries and all of that. So if you credit him for winning by that kind of method, well, fine, you can go there. I am not going there. And that is probably what caused all of these things. His presence more than anything else. And that's not good for our democracy. Paying Cambridge Analytica, bringing in Mercury. Is that a good thing for our democracy? And you want to praise Barjagdeo for that? I don't believe so. I have a different opinion.
The 2015 elections petition, it hasn't been heard. Why do you believe that this 2020 elections petition is going to be heard before a next election in 2025?
Because the force of circumstances, the fact that judges already understand the need for urgency in determining matters like these, just like Roxanne George did, or acting Chief Justice, just like Yonette Cummings and the Chancellor appreciated and ensured that she had a Court of Appeal ready and so on, and just like the CCJ indicated by the arbiter that matters in relation to elections must be dealt with expeditiously. The entire world now knows that Guyana elections petition take a long time. And even Bruce Golding made the remark that it should never take that long time. And I believe that this is going to be a turning point in relation to that judicial slothfulness. It is going to be acted upon quickly.
Has that elections petition been filed?
It has not been filed because I understand today is when the publication or the gazetting has happened. It's only today. It's 28 days after the publication, which means the gazetting of the results. And I think yesterday the PVP sent in their candidates, their parliamentarian list. Today the thing, I think, was published. Today is what, Friday? Right. Today or yesterday? I can't recall, but we have 28 days from the date of publication.
So
we got to wait on the publication date and then...
And it will be filed in that 28 days.
Oh, certainly it will be filed in the 28 days.
It's being worked on.
Yes, I am well aware that it is being... I'm a member of the legal committee.
So you are helping with
that. I am helping with that too, yeah.
Okay. The WPA today... notified that it was leaving the coalition. What are your views on this?
I think that's unfortunate, a development. But I think that knowing the leadership of the APNU, it's going to be worked out properly to the extent of resolving that difference. These things do happen in a coalition format. And you have to understand, it happens even in what is called the unitary parties, meaning like a PPP. When they kicked me out, that was a fallout. When they kicked Moses Nagamutu or Ralph Ramkaran, that was a fallout. You would have your fallouts. Every day it happens in the PPP. When you have it in a formation called APNU, with one party saying that this is what, you know, you don't like what's happening, it's just like a member falling out. But when you are good leaders, you call them in, please come back and let's have a talk. You know? And if you are like a Granger, you're certainly going to tell them, please come, let's have a chat. And it should be resolved. I hope that it is resolved.
So you think that they would change their minds?
I think so. I think that they will change their minds, knowing the peculiar difficulties you have in selecting people and so on. So I believe, and I think that that is the way to go, because you just can't go and start fragmenting. It is not the wisest of politics to play.
In my wrap up, I just want to hear from you as leader of the AFC. What would you tell the public to expect from this AFC onwards to 2025, or as you say, there might be a ruling where there's a
shortly before that,
elections
or
again.
Before that.
Yes, but until whichever time, what do you have to say to the public about the future of the AFC, leadership policies? What can the public see the AFC representing for it and its interests, and anything else you feel that you should expound on? Go ahead.
Well, I would like to see reforms at GCOM level, to the extent that what happened from March 2nd to August 2nd, there is no recurrence of. Absolutely. That's a major policy that we would want to see implemented, and if it requires legislative changes, we would certainly work with the government to ensure that that does not happen. Again, constitutional reform that had started with the APNU-AFC government under Prime Minister Moses Nagamutu, we would like to see also fast-tracked. The PPP were talking about those kinds of constitutional amendments. I would like to see that also fast-tracked, and we were certainly going to urge that they move with some pace this time around. We have to ensure at a policy level that there is equality in the distribution of the oil and natural gas wealth. We have the Sovereign Wealth Fund Act. It is called the Natural Resources Act. And we would like to see, especially, the letter and spirit of that act being executed on for purposes of ensuring that the newfound wealth of Guyana is distributed not to the family and friends of the PPP, but all Guyanese. I would prefer the president of the country, Irfan Ali, to be talking on those issues rather than Jagdeo. Because Irfan Ali is supposed to be the president of this country, not Jagdeo. we would also, at an AFC level, ensure that we meet the base and talk to them and educate them more about our evolving democracy, talk about constitutional rights that they have, local governments and involvement. Elections will be soon come up for local government. We'll want them to be on the ground.
You're going to run again as AFCLU?
The decision will be made after collaborating with the APNUAFC leaderships. Mm-hmm. And also to enhance whistleblowership inside of the government. It is only when we know the wrong things going on in government that we can remedy the situation because of the information via these whistleblowers. And that is an especially important part of it. I would want, finally, to say the anti-corruption legislation strengthening will be a big part of our campaign at the AFC level too. We do not want politicians of the day, whether they be young or old, to be involved in any corrupt transactions. And we so must live the examined life. When called upon, we must make our declarations to the Integrity Commission. We could be checked there. And all of that, it's important. And that can enhance more integrity in governance and in government. Thanks very much.
Will the AFC, this is the final question, and will the AFC be looking to bring back Mr. Gaskin into the fold?
Oh, Mr. Gaskin.
Although he can't go to Parliament, will you want him?
There is a liberal, our ideological position is liberal democracy. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Gaskin is a fella I have the highest regard. He's very high principled, and I respect his opinion that he made. He also respects my call on the matter that we allow it to go to the final, and that's it. If you want to live the liberal life or the democratic life, you have to understand that freedom of expression must reign. And freedom of expression means, as it says, it could also mean the insulting, the offensive, the silly, the irrational. And in all due respect, I must say that by the recount, he was proven correct. He had told me a couple of things, that these things are not showing up in accordance with. And I said, well, let's wait on the recount and the final thing. He has been vindicated. What do you do with a man who's done it to that extent? You're going to throw him out of the party? As leader of the party, I will never throw him out. I have only good things to say about him. And he has been a treasured treasurer for my party.
So he still remains treasurer?
Yeah, he's still my the party's treasurer.
And there's always a place for him.
Always be a place in the Alliance for Change as it is really constituted now, mm-hmm. for him. I'm not going to do him anything.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah.